Welcome in, everybody, to a Thursday edition of Birds 365, our 1001 episode here for the next 1,000 of kicking off here on Birds 365. Johnny Mac, how are you doing in this Thursday morning, brother?
Doing well. Hopefully we can turn the page to the draft. Obviously, still some the name that shall not be spoken stuff. People can't get over it, yada, yada, yada. I'll let Jeff Kerr deal with that. I am pushed out.
Johnny Mac was fired up pre-show, everybody, about this.
Pushed out. Yeah, one thing I always say about debating, you know, if your premise is wrong, you're lost. And your premise is wrong for all those butthurt. You're arguing from a faulty premise. You've been bamboozled. That's how I describe it.
Bamboozled. Where is that from? Isn't there a famous movie or a line that's from? Yeah,
Malcolm X, famous speech.
Yeah, right. Yeah, good stuff there, Johnny Mac.
Which people get upset that I'm bad. But yeah, you've been bamboozled. You've been bamboozled. You know, Warren Sharp. I will say one thing. Warren Sharp, because he's been out. And by the way, used to work for the Eagles. Sharp football analysis, used to be a consultant for the Eagles. He doesn't hate the Eagles. And even I didn't know this, but right here to point out how you've been bamboozled over the entire history of the Tush Push, which is basically three seasons. The Eagles aren't even the best short yardage team in football. They're number four. The Los Angeles Rams are number one. Kansas City's number two. Denver's number three. Philadelphia's number four. Great, phenomenal, still great,
right?
Very effective. They're not even number one.
Is this thing all about just TV, John? I mean, seriously, at the end of the day,
yes. People have, you know, they've been bamboozled. They've been told. It's been marketed. It's got the catchy nickname. A couple of them. You've been bamboozled. Even the Eagles have embraced it. And talked about how hard they worked at it and blah, blah, Nick and all that. And
yeah, by the Jeffrey way, said they invest a lot of resources in the Tush Push.
Well, club. And by that, he means we draft a bunch of offensive linemen.
Right.
And that's what he's saying. And if you want to invest those resources, dummies, you can do it too. Well, you also need the quarterback part of it. But anybody can invest those resources into those types of players if they want. But, you know, I often talk about the Eagles' success and people copying the wrong things. And where they should start the copying is offensive line, number one.
Yeah.
But they don't. And that's what Jeffrey was talking about. But anybody could do it. But, you know, Warren, as I said, used to work for the Eagles. He certainly does. If he does have a dog in a fight, it's the Eagles. But he's honest. And yeah, and you know, I was too hard on the Rams. The Rams are a good football team, and I've admitted that because I was down on the Rams. And now, in hindsight, they gave the Eagles their toughest challenge by far. If you think about it, in the playoffs, and they're a really good team that has one really big weakness, and obviously the Eagles, to their credit, were able to take advantage of it. And yeah, over the last 3 years, they're number one in short yardage situation. And ironically, because I knew that, and I talked about it when the Eagles played them, Kyren Williams was very effective in short yardage.
Yep.
And the Eagles forced him to fumble twice.
Yes.
In big situations. In the first game, they were going right down the field and driving for a score, and they converted. And all of a sudden, the ball pops out. And I think that one was Zach Bond. And then in the playoffs, it was Jalen Carter. You remember the Jalen Carter punch?
Yeah.
So
they were incredible at that punch out last year, Jeff.
Yeah, they were.
Yeah.
They were. And that's another, they should take pride in that. So the Eagles are very good at short yardage. Don't get me wrong. But they weren't number one. And last year, they actually took a pretty significant step back, as Jeffrey Lurie already confirmed as well. And yet they had the best team in football. And there's so much stuff to be proud of with this team. And that's the focus. And from there, Jeff Kerr, get here as early as possible.
See, we're going to have Jeff Kerr on today, as Johnny Mac just alluded to. Jeff, why does this bother you so bad? I know, is it just because of the misinformation?
Yes. Yes.
Boozling? Is that what's driving you up the wall about this?
Completely.
Even pre-show, Johnny Mac came in hot again today.
Completely. The misinformation is insane. And again, when you start a debate from a faulty premise, it's never going anywhere. So you have this whole group of fans that are convinced that this is a perfect play, that this never fails, even though they've seen it fail, and it could be for different reasons. Could be for jumping off sides, could be for lining up off sides, could be for Kelsey trying to steal a little bit too much back in the day, getting called for a penalty, for manipulating. There's a bunch of different reasons than somebody actually coming up and stopping it, which Jacksonville, I believe, did. Not too many teams did when they actually got the ran to play, but a few did. And the number was under 80%, which is, you think about 86% is their 4th-and-1 conversion rate over the last 3 years. They were under that last year pretty significantly. So yeah, when you start with a faulty, you're swimming upstream, and everybody's starting with this nonsense because they've been fed it,
right?
Because it's a marketing ploy. And then when you get to the reality of the situation, like, nobody gives a shit that the Rams are good on short yardage, do they? I don't know. I've never heard it.
I've literally never heard it.
And then there's the baked-in aspect of jealousy, which certainly when you win the title, people are just, ask the Patriots.
Right, yeah.
You ask the Chiefs.
The big dogs, exactly.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, for years you heard about the Chiefs. The referees are all for the – everybody's jealous. Of course they're jealous. That's baked into it if you win the title. But that's not what the NFL is doing. But, you know, whatever. Whatever. Just stop going on my – believe what you want to believe. Listen to the charlatans. I don't care.
I like
that. But I will say – if you listen to this show, you knew what was going to happen before it happened to this point.
Yes, that is for certain. I mean, you've been telling me exactly as this played out, you had it way in advance on the whole thing.
And by the way, there's no guarantee. I strongly believe they'll get 24 votes in May, but there's no guarantee they'll get the 24 votes. Now, everybody else is on that bandwagon. I saw Schefter believes it. All right, great. So it's real now. If you were listening to the show, you already knew it.
It's about the TV. They don't like the TV. I mean, let's be real. It's an ugly-ass play on TV. I think that's what it's about. But maybe the medical thing, they brought in Alan Sills to convince everybody that there's medical issues.
Well, the medical part, and again, the medical part of it is sort of in their back pocket. Anytime they want something, they bring
that
out.
Yeah, I think they're just using that, though, to scare. I mean, look, because you're going to have owners who believe their vote. There's maybe owners who believe the other way, and then there's probably the middlers, right, who are like, yeah, I can be swayed one way or the other. Just, well, what's the best way to sway them, John? You tell them their pocketbook's going to get hurt, and boom, they're done. They're voting against it.
That's my cynical nature, and that's why I think I'm good at this stuff, because I'm more cynical than most people. So I ask the questions, and you know, it's just like politics. So what they're doing behind the scenes is they're twisting arms and lobbying to get the 8 extra votes. And how is the easiest way to do that in the NFL? Yeah, I said it numerous times. Bring up the safety issue. It's the easiest way to do it. But it, for the real reason, and nobody can be 100% certain of why Roger Goodell wants it done or why Roger Goodell got on board. But yeah, my my educated guess would be they just want to play. They just want pushing out of the game. And that's their own fault for bringing it back. That is their own. I've been talking about this. If you want to know why I'm frustrated, since the Bush Tush play in college, literally. And I think that happened. I'm looking it up right now. 2005. That same year is when they took it out. They took it out of the game. And I remember talking about it at the time. I go, are they insane? They don't want this bullshit in their game. And it took way too long. But now they're where they are. And that was one of the most famous games in modern college football history. The USC, look it up, the USC Bush Push game, where Matt Leinart was stuck at, you know, the game was over. Notre Dame had upset. USC was number one in the nation at the time. They stopped him at the goal line, and a whistle never blew. And Bush just came up and pushed the quarterback into the end zone. And it just looked awful. It looked awful. Because for years, even whether it was on the books or wasn't on the books, and again, longtime football fans understand this, maybe not the modern generation who've only been watching it. It used to be consistent that when your forward momentum was stopped, they would stop the play. The whistle would blow. And for years, you had a whole group of football who grew up that way, and that was it. Play's over.
Yeah, it used to be where they spotted the ball, like where your forward momentum stopped.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. That was the end of the play. And for some reason, they kept letting it go and letting it go and letting it go to the point we are where we are now. And yeah, I think it was a mistake. And now, by the way, when they
at KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
I do get this passed, and if it's not going to be passed, and I've said it pretty consistently, they're going to get a pass. If it's not this season, it'll be next season. Eventually, they're going to get a pass. And again, pushing as a whole, not just the tush push. And I promised I wasn't going to talk about it, and here I am talking about it.
Yeah, you broke your promise.
And, you know, now you have a more difficult problem. The NFL has, because now they have a whole generation of fans who only know it one way now. And they're going to be incensed when they start stopping plays and saying, oh, play's over. Because that's not how you do it. So they create these own problems. I hardly feel sorry for the NFL. They shouldn't have let it.
You've talked about the over legislation of the NFL, John, since I met you, I first heard you on the air.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah. Yeah. So, you know, in 2005, so for those who don't know, the Bush play, you should if you're a college football fan and you've been around a little while, was technically an illegal play at the time. You know, they basically, it's sort of like their version of the tuck rule. You know, they fucked it up. They didn't want to admit they fucked it up. So all of a sudden they pretended you're allowed to do it. But the rule at the time was the runner shall not grasp a teammate. No other player on his team shall grasp, push, lift, or change into him to assist him in forward progress. By the way, Roger Goodell, if you're listening, there's your language. Use that language. But they let it go, and they didn't want to admit they made a mistake in the biggest game of the year, because USC was the number one ranked team. They were the best team in the country. Notre Dame at the time was top 10, whatever. Big game, big situation. Bucked it up, didn't want to make a mistake, and here we are all these years later.
Yep. Unintended consequences, Johnny Mac. It's part of it, but good stuff there. We'll move on. At least we'll try, because I know you want to get Jeff Kerr to sound off on this. I'm curious to hear what Jeff Kerr has to say. He's been covering the Phillies. Great start for the Phils. Any Phils fans in here listening to the show? 4-1 for the boys. They're hitting good. They're pitching good. Wheeling and dealing. So, yeah, good start for the Phillies.
The rain has started, though, today. Are they playing today? I don't know.
They're playing at 1 o'clock today.
Oh, that's not good.
Yeah, so hopefully there's no rain. But
yeah, and for all the Phillies fans out there, just – don't pay attention to the Dodgers, because it'll depress you.
Well, Dodgers are coming to town soon.
Yeah, it'll depress you.
Well, we'll see, man. But did you see Ohtani had a walk-off last night?
Home run? They're 8-0.
Yeah, they're unreal. 8-0 already. Let's see, though. It's a long season in baseball.
Well, there's always injuries. They're a very old team, so.
I feel like they got so many players, though. Even if they lose a couple people, they're going to be all systems go. But we'll see. Phils look good, though. So good stuff there. We're going to talk to Jeff Kerr, who's been covering the Phillies. So good stuff from him. And we'll talk to him. John, speaking of the Phillies, Vic Fangio was at the game last night. He's a big Phillies fan. And I think he said to Johnny Clark from NBC that he's friends with the manager of the Rockies. So he always goes over to the stadium when they play versus him. And he spoke a little bit about the losses on defense. He spoke a little bit about, you know, the retirement of Brandon Graham. But I thought it was interesting. He said, yeah, we've lost a lot of guys. We've lost – not only did we lose the starting guys, but we lost the backups to those starting guys. And I'm going to be putting pressure on Howie to get this going, because we need to recoup some talent that we lost this year. But he said, we'll find a way, was the word he used. We'll find a way.
Yeah. Well, that's the way, Vic. The Eagles have a lot of confidence in them, and they should, you know, you know, after you see it, you go, I, you know, Oren Burks is the guy to me who was so good in the playoffs, so good in the playoffs. I mean, there's a long history of Oren Burks being a pretty good backup linebacker and a great special teams player. But, you know, you don't have to go back very far to see the Super Bowl the year prior when Dre Greenlaw got hurt and Oren had to come in for the 49ers, and they just abused him.
Yeah, I mean, completely. They got entire Super Bowl changed when that happened.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, Vic gets more out of people than most. And I go, and he's going to get more out of people than. So part of it is that, you know, like if you put, I got a 6-7 year sample size of what Oren Burks is versus four games. And I'd rather have Jeremiah Trotter Jr. So I think the Eagles made the right decision in that example. And they have the coach to take it, take a young player to the next level. So I think they've made good decisions. You know, Isaiah Rodgers is a player that I think Vic got a lot out of. And we'll see if he could do it elsewhere. Now he's going to get an opportunity to step up and be a starting corner. Another very good defensive coordinator. But, you know, he's got a Dory Jackson now. I'm comfortable with that.
I like a Dory. I've been saying I actually think he's one guy that has maybe a better chance to start than a lot of the other Timu signings.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. But that would be not what the Eagles want, but I agree. Right.
But if they need to do it to prevail to win games, they're going to do it, right?
Yeah. And definitely Vic is going to play who he wants to play. Right. And, you know, I'm not talking about the starting, but look, I think there's a significant downgrade from Slay to Ringo, from Sweat to Hunt from that, and that's penciled in. I don't believe Jalix Hunt will start when it's all said and done. But even if you want to go to Ojulari from Williams to Moro Jomo, all those are significant step backs, and the Eagles know that. And that's where the draft has to come in, and player development has to come in. But probably in the short term, you're going to take a step back at those positions.
I'm going to ask you.
Long term might be the opposite.
I'm going to ask you, because you've taught, you know, you always educate people on the odds of things and you know, probabilities and stuff. And I think that's a good way to approach it. But I'll say one thing I picked up on listening to Jeffrey Lurie yesterday. You know, he mentioned maybe one or two of these guys can be our this year's Zach Bond. He said that.
Yeah.
Now, wow. I'm not saying the organization has that approach or that's even Howie Roseman's thinking. Maybe it's not. It probably is not, if we're being real. But, boy, Jeffrey Lurie said that, and I immediately thought of you. And I'm like, Jeff, you might want to talk to John, who will tell you that is a very slim chance based on the probability of it. But, you know, you don't get the sense
that they're putting too much stock in this, are they? You know how good Zach Bond was last year? I haven't heard Kevin O'Connell at the meetings talking about Isaiah Rogers. So, you know, I was doing a story because he spoke very highly about Isaiah. And he had mentioned that Brian Flores, who's my favorite defensive coordinator, even more than Beck, just because of the way he plays, I think Beck's better. Let me make that
clear. What do you like more about Brian? I've never heard you say
that. I like the style. It's unique. Nobody else does it.
Right.
I just like it. He's
a little unpredictable. It's good. It is good.
He's ahead of the curve. It's not about Vic is the best defensive coordinator in football. I'm talking about my preference. I just like it. But he's also very good. You know, I put Flores top five at worst. And he was talking about Isaiah Rogers, and he brought up Zach Bond. I'm like, why the fuck is he bringing up Zach Bond? And he's like, Flores thought Zach Bond was going to be a star. And I'm like, wow, that's, you know, because he did nothing, basically. Right. But part of this is Jeffrey, and I bring up him. Part of this is hindsight. Like, one thing I respected about Howie did not spike the football on Zach Bond. He's like, this is why I brought him here. I had no idea he was going to be a first-team All-Pro.
Right.
So I think a lot of it is hindsight. But, yeah, when you're talking about odds, you might find the next Zach Bond, but that part is hard enough to find the next Zach Bond, who has played in the league for 4 years. New Orleans had him under their nose and didn't realize what type of player he was. Obviously didn't have the opportunity. That part, to find that player is hard enough. To get him for $3.5 million on top of it, you know, those generally, you might have a guy with a huge upside and people know it, and they may be stuck behind a great player in a different situation, but they'll give him a lot of money, you know, because they know he's got potential. Like, nobody knew about this guy. And with all due respect to, I believe Brian Flores said this guy's got some potential. But, you know, the whole thing, and ironically, that's the team that signed Andrew Van Ginkel. And ironically, the Eagles wanted Andrew Van Ginkel. And Andrew Van Ginkel was freaking phenomenal last year. He was a second-team All-Pro. And that's what the Eagles wanted to replicate. The Eagles had some concern. Van Ginkel was coming off a Lisfranc injury. So the Eagles had concerns over the health. He's a very expensive player. They knew they weren't going to be able to see him run until later in the summer. So they didn't want to take the risk from a health standpoint. Otherwise, Van Ginkel would have been here. Trust me. Vic loves him. Eagles loved him.
Right.
I mean, they would have went full bore if it wasn't for that injury. And by the way, like I said, he's a phenomenal player, phenomenal season last year. And they said, you know what? But he's a different type. He's not an off-ball linebacker. Can play off-ball linebacker. But he's a hybrid off-ball edge guy. More of an edge guy. More of a pass rusher. And he's also a great flat defender. You saw the pick. For people that watch other teams, they saw the pick sixes. He's probably the best flat defender in football. That's a big part of what Vic likes to do from his pass coverage, from his edge rushers. So he loves Andrew Van Ginkle. And they were trying to replicate maybe Zach Bond, who ironically is good friends with Andrew Van Ginkle. They both ended their college careers in the same, you know, they're both Wisconsin guys. So weird. And they were trying to replicate by signing Zach Bond. They were trying to replicate what Vic had in Miami with Andrew Van Ginkle.
Right.
And then Vic got him and said, no, I think he's an off-ball linebacker. And the rest is history. But Howie is very, honest. He's been, like I said, he's been very honest this offseason. He did not spike the football. He admitted, we thought his floor was he's going to be our best special teams player, basically. The Eagles thought. His floor, Zach Bond's floor, was he was going to be our best special teams player. And maybe he can offer some of the traits that Van Ginkle did. Maybe. That was their hope. Turned into the best off-ball linebacker in the NFL. It's an amazing story. Amazing story.
Is there a way to look up, like, whether I don't know how to gauge it, would it be based on contract or free agency phase? Like a guy that was signed for that type of money at that, you know, time of the year that went on to be a first team all pro. I don't know. Has that ever happened?
I can't think of another example. There, you know,
it'd be a hard thing to find because I don't know how you would filter the results, but
well, the contract part is that like that's what you try to do in free agency. That's what the Eagles try to do. That's what all smart teams try to do is find guys coming off their rookie contract that maybe, you know, you still think have that upside. The best example of this would have been Brandon Brooks in Houston. It's a good player. Nobody said average player, but the Eagles thought he could go much higher than that. And they get him with Jeff Stoutland. He turns into the best right guard in football for a number of years. But they paid him. You know, he got, you know, that part doesn't measure. That is the bar. As hard as it is to find that diamond in the rough, to get him for $3.5 million, that's crazy.
That's what saying. Like, I don't know if this ever happened. I mean, it's probably a hard thing to look up.
First team all pro, I would say it hasn't been that long. Yeah, you'd have to go through it. But for a guy to go from a 1 year, $3.5 million player into a first team all pro, yeah, I don't know if that's ever happened before.
Good stuff there. John, I got to say, there's one thing here that's not particularly the Eagles, but I got to stop and ask you about it because I'm thinking about it. I'm surprised to hear that Brian Flores is your favorite defensive coordinator. Just because the show
numerous times.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I just thought – I thought you liked more of the Fangio style. I mean, when I think of Flores, no, I think
– I hate Fangio's scheme.
You just say you just think he's the best?
Yeah. Okay. Well,
Flores is obviously that blitz happy, plays a lot of cover zero. Now, I do think he's versatile. He adapts very well. But, you know, isn't that what he's known for? Blitz, you know, pretty blitz heavy defensive.
Blitz is a lot.
A lot of cover zero.
He's known for more of, like, he does. The reason why I like him is, A, he's successful. That you have
he's
to be
very successful. Yeah.
You can't, like, he did what Vic did. They had one of the worst defenses in football, not to quite the level. The year before they got him, and the next year they were, you know, top 10, not to the level of Vic did. And they were top 10 again last year. So he's only been there 2 years. They've had a great defense both years, great modern defense. Again, not as good as Vic. I don't like Big Scheme, but not because of Big, because of everyone else that ruins it. Like, so many people copied Big Scheme.
Yeah, right. And it gets watered down.
In such a shitty fashion. Sean Desai here. At Donatel is who Flores replaced. That was one of the worst defenses I've ever seen. That might be the closest of all the big sort of copycats. Ed Donatel was with him the longest, probably knows his scheme the best, and even he can't run it. And he was terrible to the point where I don't know where Ed is now, but he is, you know, he's like Vic's age. He has been in the league. He had been in the league a very long time. And defensive coordinator in multiple places. And he was so bad that season. I don't think he's ever been, I don't think he's back in the league. So, and there were like at the high point, there were like 13 different teams running Big Scheme. And it just got to be so redundant and so boring to me. But they don't run it like Vic runs it. So Vic deserves all the flowers. But, yeah, other people kind of ruined me on his scheme. And I've said that probably more with Jody because they were struggling more. It was hard to complain about the scheme last year. So Jody knows it because I would talk about it too much probably when Sean Desai was here and even Jonathan, because Jonathan was running Big Scheme, for those who don't know. And he did it pretty successfully in year two. But you saw the criticism about letting the underneath stuff, all the good quarterbacks with the 85% completion, but yada, yada, yada. That's part of when you do it poorly, that's part of what happens. And then you saw the lack of communication in the Super Bowl. That's when you play it poorly, that's generally what happens. You blow coverages. And Vic just teaches it better than everybody else. But as far as actual enjoying a defensive scheme, yeah, Brian's far and above number one in my mind. I mean, he's so unique. He's so, like, people don't know what's going on. People hate playing the Vikings defense, offensive coach.
It is blitz happy. Wasn't it? What you know where they ranked last year in blitz? I'm sure they were top five.
They were down a little bit. He was very blitz happy in the first year because he had no corners. So he had to.
Right.
You got to get
pressure on your toes.
So he's going to shift, and that's why I like him. He's going to shift to, like Vic, and morph to around what kind of personnel he has. And he's got, you know, now he's got Van Ginkle. Last year he's got Grenard. That was a great signing. And they signed Cashman, was a great signing. So he got these three playmaking players, and they played a little bit differently. But I always, you know, if you want to know about Brian Flores, look at Josh Metellus. The guy in 2 years ago, he played 12 different positions. They're making up positions for him. Like, they've been talking about positionless players on defense for years. They already got one. His name is Josh Metellus. He plays all over. All over. He's a safety by trade, and that's generally the guys that happens. But he's played defensive line. He's played linebacker. He's played slot. He's played corner. He's played both safety positions. It's unbelievable. And that kind of stuff is interesting to me. So that's why he's my favorite defensive coordinator.
Well, he's certainly successful, and we'll see. He's got a lot to work with over there this year, so I think they're going to be a pretty good team, and we'll see how they do. We're waiting to hear from Jeff Kerr. We'll see if he gets up with us. Maybe he had a late night.
I reminded him, too. What the hell, Jeff Kerr?
Might be covering, you know, he covered the Phillies last night. That sucker went a little later than, I think it went to like 10 p.m. So this is great.
I was counting on Jeff to I was counting on him too.
Yeah, you were. Appreciate you were ready to dish to hand it off to Jeff Kerr and let him take it home on the tush push. We'll see if we can get Jeff up at some point in the show. If we can't, John, I do want to get into the NFL draft here, all right? Because the owner meetings are done. The tush push ruling is now pushed to May. So I do want to get into the draft. We're 21 days away from the NFL draft. It's April 24th. I want to run through some of the visits that the Eagles have had here in Philly. I think they're up to, I don't know how many names have been in here, maybe 10 or 12 or somewhere.
I think we're up to 14. We're almost
14. All right.
We got, unless I miss one, I think I'm at 14, but somewhere in that range.
Let's see. We got Donovan. We got Oluwafemi Oladejo. John, I love that name. I want him in Philly just for that name. That's a freaking boss name.
I don't want him in Philly because
yeah, you got to type it all the time. You get, that's one, John. You got to put in the notes.
No, he goes by Femi. So
okay, that's easier. Oluwafemi Oladejo from UCLA. All right, I like him. An edge rusher, 6'3", 259. We talked about Charles Grant, the offensive tackle from William and Mary. He's interesting because he graded out so high. How do you grade him? I'm curious to see what Stoutland would think of him. Tyler Barron, the edge from Miami, 6'5", 258. I like that, a little bit of size, but not too heavy. Jaden Blue, this one's interesting to me. The Jaden Blue running back from Texas, we've talked about him, 5'9", 196. I don't know what they would, you know, I guess just your Kenny Gainwell replacement right there, potentially.
Yeah, I don't, I mean, you got to draft people on day three, I think.
Yeah, that's right.
Most of the top 30 visits are more targeted to days one and two, but there's always a few that probably are going to go day three, and he'd be, you know, if it works, it works. Jeff will be here, by the way. I'm doing business on the air. He'll be here in about 10 minutes. He's evidently dog sitting. So,
oh man,
they don't like rain. Bad day to dog sit.
My dog hates rain, hates it. My dog doesn't care about much. He does not like, you know, big things. He feels like he can't control, like thunder and rain and stuff like that. So he's not a big fan either. I got to check on him after the show. John, keep rolling on the visits. We're going to talk to Jeff in 10 minutes. Donovan Isaraku, the edge. We've talked a lot about him. Boston College, 6'3", 248. I like him a lot. He's a player that I just see Philly in him. I don't know. Maxwell Hairston, cornerback out of Kentucky. I love this player. I don't know where he's going to fall, what round he would fall, but boy, he'd be a good guy to get into the room after Darius Slay. I mean, I like him a lot.
Yeah, that's a strange visit to me because I think he's going to go too high.
Second, what are you thinking on him? Second round?
There's a shot. I mean, I got him. Like, I do tiers basically with, and I already did one at Sports Illustrated. So I basically do tiers of where the guys may potentially get. So basically my tier one is the first round. So number 32 or a targeted trade up. And that's where I have Isaraku and Josh Connerly, the Oregon left tackle. That's it. And then I have tier two, which is think trade down 40 to 50 range. That targeted trade down. And that's where I have Hairston and Donovan Jackson, the Ohio State offensive guard. That's where I have those guys. Are they really going to take a cornerback again after taking Quinyon Mitchell, Cooper DeJean? I doubt it.
I have and a hard by the time way, too.
Ian Cummings was talking about Hairston. He thinks he's got a chance to go in the first round. So, you know. I don't know if I necessarily believe that, but he's a very good player. He's a very good prospect, and he's a great fit for what the Eagles do. You know, tailor made fit for Vic Fangio's with the zone coverage stuff. But I just can't. I don't know how you can double down at that position with so many other needs. So to me, it's a difficult fit. There's no way he'll be there at 64. No. Yeah.
And that's, I mean, that premise, John, it's different for the offensive line, but the premise of with the losses that they've had this year and what you need to get from rookies, that's why I'm having a little bit of a hard time believing the offensive line is going to go in round one, even though I know it's in the Eagles' nature and I'm not saying they wouldn't do it, But don't you need a contributor on that defense after losing six guys or seven guys?
Yeah, I've
you know, said, that's where I'm like, what are you going to put it? Get draft an offensive lineman and put him on the bench? You know, I don't see that for this team right now.
Well, a guy like Jackson, I think that's a day one starter.
At guard?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, day one starter.
Well, then that could be reasonable.
But I still think it's much more likely that it is the defensive front. Like, I think, and the one guy is the BC kid. I mean, that would be a perfect pick for the Eagles if he gets to 32 or if you have to move up a little bit. And then they brought in Oladejo. To me, he's not a first-round pick. He's probably not going to make it to the third round. To me, and I asked Ian about him, and I said, to me, he's the Kaylee Ringo guy. And by that, I mean he's raw, but he's really talented. So, you know, if you were talking to people before, and a lot of people shit on me because I said he's the Kaylee Ringo guy, and I'm waiting for day three. And if I go to sleep on day two, and I asked Ian this, and he's there, that's the guy I'm going up to get early on day three, like they did with Kaylee Ringo.
Right.
And people say, well, there's no way he's going to be there. They always say this. And I'm not picking on Ian. Ian is, he's too polite. He'd never say anything about it. But I'm talking about fans and he's never going to be there. Because you have this groupthink narrative that develops and they see everybody says he's going to be a second round pick. Well, they said the same thing about Ringo.
They said the same thing about N'Kobe Dean. He was supposed to go in round one. I mean, exactly. Come on. We were going to take Nolan Smith at 10 overall if Jalen Carter didn't fall.
Exactly. I
mean, yeah, we all know people fall in the draft. That's what happens. People have to fall.
So, to me, he's too raw. I can't take a risk on him. But if he's that day three immediate trade-up guy, like where everybody goes, oh, shit, he's still on the board. At this rate, at this point,
right,
he's got so much upside, I'm going to go get him. That's who he is for me. And the other guys they brought in, defensive tackle, Elijah Roberts is sort of a versatile guy. He can play outside, he can play inside. More of the opposite of Milton Williams in that Milton was an inside guy who could play outside. He's an outside guy that can play inside.
Okay.
But I think he's versatile enough to help. But he's a day two guy.
You think he's like a Brandon Graham comp?
Well, he's not that good.
No, I don't mean as good, but I mean like BG was one of those guys that you could play him outside, inside. He felt like he was an outside guy who could line up on the inside.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, he's more of he played mainly outside. But he can play inside. And to me, he's an old school five technique for all the people who like to talk about 3-4s that don't exist anymore. Five techniques are base ends and sort of the old school 3-4. That's the kind of player he is to me. So he can play, but he's not, to me, he's a third round comp potential. And then they just brought in or it was just revealed that they're meeting with Shamar Turner, who's another guy from Texas A&M, might be a second, third-round pick. He's versatile, too, so you can see what they're doing. He's more of an inside guy with some outside versatility. So he's more the inside guy who can play outside in a pinch like Milton. And Roberts is more the outside guy who can play inside. So you can see they're looking at versatility. But, you know, other than on the defensive front, other than Ezeruku or however, I don't see any first rounders. But then again, you know, to me, the best four players they brought in that we know of, and I'm up to 14. So there's still 16. And they probably brought in some guys we don't know about.
Yeah, you have to like pry for this information. It doesn't really come out, right? Yeah.
No, you generally get it from their agents or the players themselves that say, hey, I'm visiting Philadelphia.
Right, we met with here to boost our value and stuff.
Yeah. So, you know, the best four players they've met with are Ezra Ruku, Josh Connerly, Donovan Jackson, and Maxwell Harrison. Those are the best four players. And then you got a bunch of guys who are day two, day three picks, and a bunch of guys, not a bunch, but a couple. Jaden Blue is one you mentioned. To me, he's a day three guy. Tyler Barron's an edge rusher they brought in.
Yeah.
To me, he's a day three guy from Miami. Jalen Travis, big 6'9", swing tackle guy.
Yeah, I like him.
To me, he's a day three guy, though. I can't take him in day two.
That's a big boy, Johnny Mac. 6'9", 340.
Well, and remember that when they brought him in, it was before they got Kendall Lamb and Matt Pryor. So they have a better security blanket for swing tackle now. So I'm not sure you really need to reach for somebody like that. And they brought in so many offensive linemen. I talked about the two best. Ezra Ruku and Jackson, Charles Grant, you brought up from William & Mary, Marcus Embo from Purdue, who's probably going to be a day two pick, Anthony Belton from North Carolina State's got a chance to be a day two pick.
Yeah, I here's the interesting note on Belton. He was the first reported visit this year, right?
Yeah, he confirmed that at the combine. He confirmed it. Here's the thing.
So I got this. I think it was Jimmy Kemsky. I want to say it was Jimmy Kemsky who put this out. I hope I'm right because I want to give him credit. But he put out, it's worth noting, last year's first or the 2024 first visit was Cooper DeJean. And a couple years back, the first visit was Jordan Davis. So you have two instances in the last 3 years of the first visit being drafted by the Eagles. I'm not saying they're going to draft Anthony Belton, but I thought it was an interesting note.
Yeah, it might be. I don't know. Jimmy might have the information. I love Jimmy. I don't know if he was the actual first visit.
Right. Like it was reported first. Yeah. That doesn't mean he was actually the first, right?
And nobody had to report it because Anthony confirmed, like I said, Anthony Belton confirmed it on the podium at the combine.
Yeah.
I don't know if he was brought in first. I don't know if Cooper was reported first. It's just sort of a nice coincidence.
There might be some misinformation there. It might not. Yeah.
So I don't. But the Eagles have a history, especially recent history. They will draft guys they bring in for top 30 visits. It's not subterfuge.
Yeah. Right. And I like the thing we talked about earlier. Later in their careers, they might pick them up.
Kenyon Green is here.
Yeah. Kenyon and the quarterback.
Dorian Thompson Robinson is here. So they do. It's not subterfuge.
Well, it's always good to learn about draft prospects too. Cause I always say, I mean, if you're like us and I assume anybody listening to Birds 365 right now is like us and they're in touch with football all year round, it's worth getting to know the draft guys because then you know who's in the league. You know what I mean? The future of the NFL, you study up the draft and then those are the players who are making plays.
The Eagles love Kenny Pickett, and they traded for him.
You think Kenny's going to start over there? Probably not, right?
Well, they ain't drafting Sanders. I'm comfortable with that. No, I think ultimately they'll get Kirk Cousins. I think that's the way it's going. But, Shador, get ready. I think you're
– going to New York?
Nope. I think you're going to see the ball.
You think you – okay, so you don't think New York's taking him?
Nope. I don't think Cleveland's taking him. I don't think the Giants are taking him.
I'm going to predict that the Giants are going to take Shador. I don't have information, though. I'm just guessing. I have no information. I don't know if you have that look on your face. It looks like you have some information.
Well, I would say the Shador Sanders fans should get ready for the precipitous ball.
All right. We'll see what ends up happening. We got our boy Jeff Kerr waiting in the green room. What's up, Jeff? Good to see you in here. Let's go to my main man, Jeff Kerr from CBS Sports, joining us now on Birds 365 on a Thursday edition of the show. Jeff, we're used to seeing you on Monday. How has your week been, brother? Thanks for joining here on a Thursday edition.